and strawberry. Boysenberry. And there's a couple of jugs of homebrew beer and one of whiskey.
Bread, cheese, and crock salted butter. Milk, fruit, apples and pears.
Right feast. You did well.
Yeah. Good. Real good.
Eating was a more humiliating experience than Ryan had ever imagined. Despite his efforts, with everyone else studiously ignoring his clumsiness, he finally had to give in.
No sweat, lover. You want me to just cut it up and leave you to it?
Christy, can you feed me, Christy?
Sure.
Just for tonight. I'll get the hang of it in the end, I guess.
Later, Christy led Ryan by the hand out back to where the bathroom still stood. There was a copper-sheathed rain barrel, and she used an old pan to scoop up some of the water, carefully washing his food-splattered face with it, avoiding the burned part around his right eye.
Messy eater.
You wouldn't know it now. There, clean and smart again. Go back inside?
Not yet.
Want to catch some fresh air?
Yeah. It feels overcast.
Christy looked up at the cloudless sky, seeing the sprinkling of bright stars.
You're right. Dull and dismal. 10/10 cloud cover. Looks like it might rain later.
I need to take a piss.
Sure. At least you don't need me for that. Though I'd be very happy to grab hold and...
Just point me away from anything, lover.
Right.
Ryan fell asleep quickly, his body wanting to close down and shut off the horrors of one of the worst days of his life. Christy had placed their mattress in the upstairs back room. JB and Mildred were sleeping in the next room, while Doc, Jack, and Dean each had an attic. Johannes Ford had elected to sleep in his wag in the overgrown cottage garden. JB had discussed with Ryan whether he thought they needed a watch placed. But it was agreed that, as the house was well hidden from the rest of the Ville of Brampton, they could reasonably take a chance and go without. Ryan now found himself standing beside one of the ancient pre-dark interstates, somewhere in the flatlands of Missouri or Kansas. The wheat fields had been cropped short, leaving only charred stubble stretching from north to south and from east to west. It was featureless land beneath a sky of unbroken gray with no hint of sunlight. Ryan was waiting for something. He suspected that it was a war wag that was running hours late. It had been due to pick him up sometime in the previous day or so, but it had failed to arrive, and there was still no sign of it. In the endless, turgid dream, Ryan paced back and forth, his feet dragging through soft gray dust. Every now and again, he would stop and look around the arid landscape, shading both his good eyes with his right hand, looking for the war wag. Each time he woke up, Ryan had a strange moment of total disorientation, wondering where he was and what was wrong, and why it was so totally black. Then he'd remember and turn over, rubbing at his sore right eye, wincing at how tender it felt. The memory of the dull dream would slowly ease back to him, and he'd turn over again, shaking his head. To his dismay, Ryan found the blindness seemed to have snatched away his sense of time. Normally, he would wake up and know instinctively how much of the night had passed and how much still remained. Now, that was gone. He lay still, aware that his pulse was faster and more shallow than usual, indicating the stress he was going through. Christy slept calmly at his side. For a moment, Ryan almost woke her up, envious of her peace. He wanted to take another piss, so that could have been a good enough excuse to get her to help him. But he stayed still and silent, his eye closed, trying to use the meditation tricks that Christy had taught him to ease away the worst of the tension. This time, Ryan had a road map in his hands, showing the interstate and the maze of smaller highways that danced around it. The colors were exceptionally bright, making him squint against the dazzle. The big map didn't have a heading to show which state it was, nor were there any names printed of counties or bills. As Ryan stared down, the colored lines began to move. Slowly at first, like a sun-warmed cottonmouth, then faster, the dark green winding around some of the thin blue highways and choking them out of existence. It was like watching a kaleidoscope maze of shifting patterns.
You can't look back, son. Not when you're moving on.
The voice belonged to Ryan's father, Baron Titus of Front Royalville, one of the most powerful men in all Deathlands. But there was nobody there. Just a scarecrow standing four square in the center of the North 40. It was around 150 paces away from the crossroads. Ryan looked toward it, hunching his shoulders against the cold blue norther. The voice had come from the direction of the scarecrow. Ryan began to walk toward the crucified figure. Ryan stood less than 20 paces from the scarecrow. It wore black rubber boots and a suit in a light brown check. The white shirt had a ruffled lace front, and the tie was maroon silk. A large black hat with a drooped brim like a circuit preacher's concealed its face. The wind tugged at the clothes.
Better to have died yesterday than to live tomorrow.
Suddenly, Ryan didn't want to go up and look to see the face beneath the hat. Over the years, Ryan had watched the tattered loops of old vids and carefully read the crumbled shards of pre-dark comics. And he had come across horror stories. Even though he knew that he was dreaming, it didn't make the cold fear any easier to bear. The face of the scarecrow might be his father's, or one of his brothers, or Christie's. It might even be his own face. The crow sat perkily on the broom-handled shoulders of the tatterdemalion figure, its head on one side, yellow beak ajar, its bright eyes locked to Ryan's face.
Come on, then, pretty boy! See the show, my pretty boy! Who's a pretty boy?
Ryan was only a yard from the scarecrow now, the shadow of a large hat still falling over its visage. The wind suddenly gusted and blew the hat off. The face was that of a pumpkin, with a toothy smile neatly carved out, and two small holes gouged out for the nostrils, as well as two larger sockets to hold the succulent purple grapes that had pushed in to represent the eyes. Strands of long straw had been stapled to the top of the round orange skull. The crow hadn't moved, watching the approaching man through its perky, polished eyes. As Ryan stared at the hewn face, the bird hopped on top of the head and lowered its beak, neatly plucking out both of the grapes, leaving dark-rimmed sockets, raw and naked, brimming with purple juice that trickled across the orange cheeks like fresh, blinding blood. The bird looked at Ryan.
Blind as a bat! Though bats see fine at night, fine at night. I see you, you don't see me. See, see, amigo. I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
It suddenly launched itself into Ryan's face. Its brass beak aimed directly at his one good eye.
Oh, shit.
Ryan woke up trembling, soaked in sweat. He lay still for a few moments, his right hand fumbling automatically for the butt of the Sig Sauer. It took only a second for him to locate it, though the cool, slick metal felt oddly unfamiliar to the touch. Once he had the gun secure and cocked in his fingers, he lay still, trying to relax, fighting to slow his breath and steady his heartbeat. He realized in a few seconds that Christine was no longer lying at his side. With her sensitivity to mood changes, she would immediately have been aware of his distress. He wondered where she'd gone and what the time was. Cautiously, Ryan lifted his right hand over his good eye, cupping it as he made sure that the eye was open, feeling the lashes brush against the skin of his palm. Then he slowly moved his hand away again.
Anything, lover?
Fire blast.
Sorry, didn't mean to make you jump. I know what you said, but I came in and saw you experimenting. I guess there's still no glimmer of light?
Nothing.
Jack and JB went out together on an early morning recon. It was obvious that Ryan couldn't have gone out with them on a potentially dangerous mission, but it still hurt him that JB hadn't at least gone through the motions of consulting him. The pair reported back to the others over a breakfast of cold chicken and ham, with bread and cheese and a variety of the preserves that had been stolen the previous evening.
Funny thing, sign calls the place Bram Town, but the store calls it Brampton, and the ruined church is the first tabernacle of the Fishers of Men of Brampton, Louisiana.
See anything of this family we heard about?
Nothing, Ryan. There's a trout farm other side of the Ville. Seems to be main source of work. Also, Logan. River runs through the place. Goes off east through the high bluffs. Could be a big house there.
Seemed normal. Reckon there's about 200 or so men, women, and children in the Ville. Something kind of off-kilter the way they walked. Not the usual kind of chatter of women doing washing in the stream by the mill. Children seemed listless, kind of half-hearted in their playing.
Dogs ran quiet.
Watched from the screen of trees. We hung around a half hour or so. Nobody came near us. seemed like everyone knew precisely what they had